Today is Friday, February 5th, 2021. This is a Grand Canyon oral history interview with James Corson, spelled C-O-R-S-O-N. My name is Tom Martin. Good afternoon, Jim. How are you today?
I'm pretty good for a guy who's 96.
Listen, if you can't hear me, please just speak up and say, I can't hear you.
Well, I can hear you if you're slow and easy.
Okay, thank you. My name is Tom Martin, and Jim, I'm going to start this by asking you what year you were born.
1924.
Where?
In Cape May County, New Jersey. I was out in the country.
What were your folks doing there?
Farming.
Okay. What were they farming?
They were poor farmers.
Okay. What were they trying to farm?
Well, they didn't try. They joined ranks with his brother,
okay,
Uncle Frank, to be dairy farmers.
Oh. Okay.
And the two of them produced milk.
Nice.
And corn. And a little home gardening.
Okay. What was your father's name?
Ernest H. Corson.
And what was your mom's name?
Marion.
M-A-R-I-O-N?
Yes.
Okay. Do you know how they met?
How they met? No, but there is a story that's very early in their meetings.
Yeah?
My father decided to go west and be a tree surgeon.
Oh.
A nice decision, one that he was very pleased about, except that he fell out of a tree.
Oh.
And broke both wrists.
Oh.
And they don't need tree surgeons with no wrists.
Oh, my. Oh.
And he claims that my mother took advantage of him in that weakened condition. And that's how they come to get married.
Oh, that's cute.
Well, it's a nice story.
Yeah. Do you have brothers and sisters?
I did have three brothers. One died at age 7.
Okay.
Then I had two brothers, an older and a younger. No, that's not right. I had three brothers, an older and a younger, and not counting the one that died.
Okay. So, All right. So did you grow up there in New Jersey?
I did. I spent all my life up till age 18. I became the chief helper on the farm when I was 14.
Okay. Okay, so let me just back up a minute. So you're the chief helper on the farm at 14.
Right.
Did you quit school to do that?
No.
Okay.
I only had to be the chief helper in the summer.
Okay.
And my father did appreciate an education.
Nice. Okay. What were you interested in school?
Being in school. In fact, when school started in the fall, that's when I went on vacation, you might say.
Okay.
I didn't have to work so hard.
Right, right. And I imagine that there was no such thing as a real vacation for you.
I was so pleased to go back to school. Some people hated it, but I loved it.
Nice, nice. When you were in school, were you thinking that, you know, before you went into the service, were you thinking you might go to college?
I was hoping I could.
Okay. But then we're talking about World War II coming on here.
Right.
Okay.
Before World War II, however, I took a competitive exam in the state of New Jersey and was number one in that exam.
Wow.
And that was 200 of the best kids in New Jersey, so I felt kind of good about that.
So was who put that exam up? Did your school do that?
I had one teacher who was better than all the others, and he took a carload of kids over for that examination, and I don't think anybody else even paid any attention to it, but I'm not sure about that.
Nice.
He was the ag teacher, the agriculture teacher.
Do you remember his name? How do you spell Lee's last name?
Well, L-E-E.
Yeah.
C-O-U-R-T-E-R.
Thank you.
And that may be wrong.
Okay. Good. That's fine. And did he inspire you, or did he kind of?
Oh, he was wonderful. He was one of the best teachers.
How? Yeah.
Oh, Christ. That's a hard question. But he enjoyed teaching.
Nice.
He enjoyed his subject. And he was a very distinguished gentleman. He was different than most of the teachers.
Nice. Nice. That's fun.
I hope some of his relatives are listening, but I'm not sure he had any children.
Well, it's always important to recognize good teachers. Nice. Were you thinking, at what point did you think you might go into the service?
Pearl Harbor.
Okay.
Changed me instantly from a pacifist to an angry militant.
Okay.
And I was too young to volunteer at that point, but after a year passed, I was 18 and going to college on a scholarship, and signed up for the Air Force.
Okay. Let's back up a bit. When did you graduate from high school?
1942.
Okay. The spring of 42. Had your older brother preceded you into the service?
No.
Okay. Oh my. Okay. Had you been outside of New Jersey up to that point?
Very little. The college was in New Jersey, New Jersey State, and I had been to New Brunswick, New Jersey, where the college was, and I had spent some time in summers with my aunt in Collingswood. Aunt and uncle and cousin.
Where's that?
Collingswood is a suburb of Philadelphia.
Okay. Oh, so out to Pennsylvania.
Pardon?
Out to Pennsylvania.
Philadelphia is in Pennsylvania, but Collingswood is in New Jersey.
Oh, it is. Okay. So I'm very illiterate about that geography. Okay. So, traveled a little bit.
A little, yeah. And I certainly wanted to travel more. I planned to travel more, and I think probably I joined the Air Force so I could travel.
Okay. When did you sign up?
I signed up in college and was accepted, but at that time they decided they would change recruiting. Because they wanted to tell people where they could go. And so I had to go in through the draft.
Okay.
Which is interesting. I went in through the draft all right, but they didn't catch up with me for about 3 months.
Okay.
And that 3 months was as miserable a goddamn 3 months as you could have. I went through basic training twice.
Wow.
And there was nothing good about basic training. Basic training at that time was the same as Cornwallis when he came over to win the revolution and lost.
Hey.
And he deserved to lose.
Where did you go through basic?
He was he was not my idea of a leader anyway. He was very poor English and from Poland or somewhere difficult.
Wow.
Anyway, his language was atrocious, his manners were atrocious, and he felt that his job was to make us hate everybody.
Wow. Okay. Well, yes. Yep.
But I still wish him dead.
Hmm.
And he is by now, so.
Yeah, yeah. So from Fort Dix, where did they send you then?
From Fort Dix, I went out to Jefferson Barracks in Missouri.
Okay.
And we merely started over. It was basic training all over again, except that I had pneumonia the whole time I was there.
Hey.
Temperature up above 101, and that wouldn't get you in the hospital. You had to have 102 to get in the hospital, so I spent the whole damn time more than half sick.
Hmm.
And hating it just as bad. The man in charge of our training there was some sort of a serious misfit also. He had a broken arm that was fixed by the Army, and they did it wrong. And sent him home with a crippled arm. And I don't know any facts to go with his arm, but my own created story is that he was drunk and thrown out of a bar and broke his arm in that way.
Hmm. Okay, okay.
I enjoyed making that story up.
But now you're going through the, what sort of drills were you going through?
Like I say, it was Cornwallis basic training.
Okay.
We did nothing but close order drills and marching and taking hikes. And one of our hikes was with 6 inches of snow and sleet frozen on the ground.
Hey. Okay.
And if you slipped on the ice and fell down, the results were catastrophic.
Oh, boy.
You couldn't escape going home full of
things. Yeah.
That had to be cleaned up.
Yeah. My.
Anyway, Jefferson Barracks, I had a temperature of 101 the whole damn time. And the word came through after we'd been there for 3 weeks that the Air Force wanted us. And we were going a troop train to California.
Wow.
But I couldn't have a temperature. So I went to the doctor, and he gave me some pills. And my temperature went away long enough to get on the troop train and ride out to California, where I thought I'd died and gone to heaven. The oranges were in bloom.
Oh, my.
And they treated me like a decent human being, which was a total novelty. And, I thought, like I say, that I died and gone to heaven. The air was full of orange blossoms, and you had to be there to even believe what was going on.
Wow.
Never got my fever back, never was sick again for a year.
Wow. What do you remember about the train ride over? Was it a pretty full train?
We were just riding on a standard train in those days.
Right. Was it standing room only, or was it that packed? Because at one point, heading west, those trains were standing room only.
It was not that bad.
Okay.
We had about 25 troops on there, but it was not a troop train.
Okay. All right. And what was your impression of America as you rode that train and crossed it?
Well, I don't have a great deal of impressions.
Okay.
Don't forget I had been sick for 3 weeks.
Yeah.
And so I slept a lot.
Okay.
And as I say, we were not a troop train, so there were a lot of other people on it. And my impressions going across the country were biggest and best when we went up the Rocky Mountains.
Oh.
And across Colorado and down the other side.
Wow, yeah.
I resolved to come back and see it again sometime.
Nice.
And that's why I'm living here now.
Okay. Very nice. So you woke up in heaven.
just about.
Yeah. Where did you go in California?
Santa Ana. Santa Ana is south of Los Angeles, far enough so that it is not smoggy all the time.
Okay. And this is the Air Force. Did they put you through a battery of tests to figure out what...
Christ, no. Well, yes, they did. I'm glad you asked that question. But what they did was run it through basic training for the third time.
Again.
And it was very damned hard to appreciate that.
Yeah.
But they also did test us, and they were testing us for pilot and navigator and bombardier.
Okay.
And I came out just in the middle of pilot training. In other words, not above average.
Okay.
And for bombardier and navigator, those were second prize.
Yeah.
Everybody wanted to be a pilot.
Yeah.
But when I got before the board who were questioning my motives, I said I wanted to be whatever they said I would be best at.
Nice.
Really good philosophy, and I still think that way.
Good for you.
Anyway, they sent me to navigation training at, Hondo, Texas.
Ooh.
And there I washed out.
Oh.
I was one of the smartest kids in the class, and I did something seriously stupid and washed out because I had done so badly on the first exam. They gave us graph paper to do some navigating on, and I can't explain even now how I decided that graph squares were a different weight or size than I should have. So my navigation on paper failed the test completely.
Oh, wow.
I got a 52 or something like that.
Whoa.
And they said that I could go back and start over, or I could go someplace else. Well, it so happened I hated Hondo, Texas. It was a really rotten management.
Okay.
And just sitting around waiting for another assignment, I had a little vacation. They weren't demanding anything of these guys who were waiting around. We were just waiting around.
Okay.
And the next assignment that came up was to go to Midland, Texas, and become a bombardier.
Okay.
That was at the bottom of the list of things you could become, and nobody really wanted to be a bombardier, but I turned out to have hit the jackpot.
Okay.
Because Midland, Texas was the headquarters for all bombardier training, and instead of a bunch of assholes, I was being run by a group of carefully selected officers, and I can give an example of this had failed something or mismanaged something, you were restricted to the base and assigned to the library to study. And at that library, there was a colonel on Sunday sitting there and coming by every once in a while to be sure you didn't have a comic book in your study book.
Yep.
And to my mind, if you could get a colonel to work on Sunday, you had a pretty darn good school.
Nice.
I loved it and did quite well.
So,
there was no baloney. We might have had some basic training, but it wasn't the main thing.
Right.
They weren't torturing us.
What kind of aircraft were you training in?
Oh, we trained in BT-7s, maybe. I don't really know, but they had two engines.
Okay.
And they were beach craft, and five people could sit in. There was a little cabin.
Okay.
And five people were taking the training at the same time in the same plane.
Okay.
And we only had one negative in that operation. We had a pilot who was home from the war and wanted to be back fighting.
Oh.
And so he did what he could to make life difficult for the cadets.
Hmm. Okay.
He gave him something to entertain himself.
Oh, dear. Hmm.
And even now I wish him to drop dead.
Gosh.
I can't really explain how he tried to make it difficult, but if you're learning to navigate, it helps a hell of a lot if you're flying straight and level and everything's going the way it's supposed to be. And he felt that we needed more than that, so he was adding things to the flight that didn't belong there.
That sounds like a great way to get sick.
It actually didn't do us any harm.
Okay.
He didn't die a violent death as we wished. He just kept on tormenting. What he wanted to be was reassigned to combat.
Yeah, sure.
And I don't know why, because I've been there. Anyway, I graduated, and they gave us a cigar, my first cigar, and I was 20, and didn't smoke it all the way, but I did light it up and try it, and I didn't like it.
Okay.
Never had a cigar since.
Okay.
Anyway, what happened next, we were assigned to a crew. And so we went back to Savannah, Georgia, where we joined a crew made up of people from all over the country and all the different schools, or whatever they were specially. And I had to be the navigator because we didn't get one.
Ooh.
Even though I was a bombardier, I had some navigation training.
Okay.
And I enjoyed that quite much. Anyway, later in the game, I became a navigator. They discovered that navigators were important and bombardiers weren't very, and so they sent some of us anyway to become both.
Oh, wow.
And I had no trouble at all with navigation school. I wasn't smart enough. I just had really blown that first exam.
Right.
Anyway.
Because I'm assuming that there's a lot of work with graph paper.
Okay. What else? Well,
so you got introduced to a crew, and then did you spend some time training actually in the air?
We did. We spent months training.
Okay.
And my good fortune was to be with one of the smartest guys in the Air Force. He was a 5-star athlete at Old Miss.
Wow.
That might explain it, but he was enjoying himself as a 5-star athlete and one of the smartest kids in the school.
Wow.
So fact, he flew 29 missions, I believe, without anybody getting really injured.
Wow.
There was a little damage one time and a crash landing one time, but he flew it all and came home.
Wow. What was his name?
Everett Harper. He died at age 56, but by that time he was the, He was the Air Force representative to Congress just to keep track of what was going on.
Wow. Okay, yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah. So did you fly with him? Was he your crew leader?
All through training, but over in England, first of all, we had too goddamn many airplanes there to make sense of it. Everywhere you looked, there was an airbase.
Hmm.
We called England a land-based carrier. I guess it was the 707 bomb group.
Okay.
But I was only assigned there a few days because I got sent out on a mission where I was a substitute. And you'd have the damn plane and everybody was a substitute. And nobody had really flown together. And that was a mistake and it was even a contradiction of our rules.
Wow.
But we had a brand new airplane that had never flown in combat.
Okay.
We had a brand new pilot who was flying his first.
Ooh.
First pilot. He had 20 missions as a co-pilot, but that's slightly different. Anyway, we went out and got shot down. And we were in formation with 27 planes. And we were the only plane shot down that day in the whole European theater.
Wait, so back up a bit. What kind of plane?
B-24.
Okay.
This was known by the folks who flew in them as a consolidated mess.
Okay.
And
Talk to me about the plane.
Well, it was a four-engine heavy bomber, and at that time would carry bombs, more bombs further than any other airplane.
Okay. Okay.
And every day sent possibly 1,000 of them over Germany.
Mm.
The Germans taught us saturation bombing.
Yep.
All of us went into the service thinking there were some rules for decency, and there were none.
Yeah.
Saturation bombing means if you know there's a target in a town, you go beat the hell out of the whole town, and you're bound to hit the target.
Right.
And, except for one thing, I was on my second mission, as I told you, and that was the end for me. Out of all those planes, 1,000 in the sky, only one was shot down, and it was mine.
So where were you guys when you got hit, and can you tell me about that?
Well, a little, but not much. We were flying over Hanover to destroy an oil refinery if we could. We flew in formation so that you didn't have a lot of room to maneuver, but our plane was the last plane filled up and ready to go.
Okay.
So we got the last position, which was known as Dead End Charlie.
Hey.
And we were clearly visible. There were some clouds, but it wasn't overcast like it usually was. And I could see them shooting at us.
Hmm.
When we got hit in the right wing and caught fire immediately, the B-24 was a good one for that.
Okay.
And there's certainly a chance that we had a leaky gas tank.
Mm.
Because it was the third gas tank in that position. The two others had been leaky in places where you could catch it and change it. Anyway, we caught fire.
Okay.
And the pilot asked me to navigate back to England, but we weren't going anywhere near that far.
Okay.
And it seemed to me that he was waiting forever and waiting forever and waiting forever. I wanted to jump out, but I waited until he gave the order, and the other girl stayed in the damn plane and tried to crash land it, and B-24s don't crash land.
Ooh.
They crash and burn.
Okay.
And that's what happened.
Oh, my.
Five people went in and crashed and burned, and it was pretty goddamn stupid because we all knew you couldn't crash land a B-24. I don't know how they decided, but remember, this pilot was on his first flight as first pilot.
Right.
Sort of outnumbered. He was also the youngest pilot on the airbase.
Oh, my.
So that he was only 19 or 20, and I don't know how that was.
Oh, my gosh.
So, here I am, farm boy from New Jersey, a prisoner of war, and would you believe it was better than flying? A lot better, because nobody was shooting at you.
Right.
And so, in spite of what I expected and what was reasonable to expect, I was better off in prison camp.
How did you get captured? I mean, I'm assuming you're floating to the ground. Were they on you right when you landed?
I didn't have any trouble at all getting captured. I landed in town.
Oh, my.
Surrounded by 20 or 30 civilians.
Okay.
And that was a big favor, turns out, because you don't shoot across the circle if it's your friends on the other side.
Right. Very good.
And the first guy out was carrying a big stick, a much heavier than usual walking stick, and he applied it to my head vigorously. He split my scalp and made me bleed a little bit, but what his intention was, I think, was to beat me to death.
Mm.
But another old guy came out carrying a rifle and said, "Knock it off. You know, the Air Force wants to talk to this guy and can't talk if he's dead." So the guy unwillingly quit beating me, and the man with the rifle took over and stayed with me all day.
Wow.
And looking backward, I realized it was to protect me from the Germans, not because he wanted the honor of staying with me all day.
Right.
His daughter was one of the 300 people who came to see me and even possibly finger my jacket and things like that.
Mm.
I was fortunate in my location. I was in the side yard of a convalescent home for German soldiers.
Okay.
Wounded on the Eastern Front. So all of them were mad at the Russians, and nobody was mad at the Americans especially.
Thank heavens.
But it was pretty hard to appreciate being bombed every day.
Yeah.
Anyway, I do fault the old guy who was going to beat me to death with a stick. But I went back 52 years later. It took me that long to get back.
Wow.
And there were a number of people that I almost knew. The man who came out and saved me would have been 103 or something, but his daughter came in among the people who came through to have a look.
Wow.
And she was there and by now had three grandchildren.
Oh, cool.
And they welcomed me like a member of the family, had me over to dinner and talked about the good old days.
Wow.
And I hit town when they were having their first wine and beer festival. So the town was having a big party and I was invited and treated absolutely wonderful.
Wow. Nice.
Somebody was still mad at me.
Nice.
The guy who was beating on me either had died or didn't come to the party.
Hmm.
Anyway, I didn't meet him again. But the guy who came out and saved me was dead also. He would have been over 100 if he'd stayed.
Yeah. Yeah.
Anyway, that was actually a happy reunion.
Nice. What was the name of the town you landed in? Do you remember?
Well, I do remember, but give me a moment here.
Okay.
Hildesheim.
How do you spell that?
Well, Hildesheim is Hilda's home. And Hildesheim might spell it.
Okay. And where is that near? What major cities?
Hanover.
Okay.
was being interrogated, the interrogator said, "What was your target?" And I said, "For God's sake, what's missing?" He was more American than most Americans. He had spent 7 years in the United States, graduated from college over here.
Oh, wow.
Went back to Germany when the Reich was rising.
Mm.
And everything in Germany looked good.
Yeah.
And I guess nobody knew how things were going to go because they thought they could fight us and win.
Right.
In fact, they weren't planning to fight us. They were just planning to fight England and pay them back. So when we came in, that spoiled things.
Yeah.
Huh. Anyway, we were bombing, like I say, with thousands of planes in the air every damn day and dropping thousands of tons of bombs.
Mm.
And prison camp didn't take me long because I had only been overseas 2 weeks and I didn't know any military secrets, and I kind of convinced the fellow with my attitude that I didn't know any secrets. And so I went right along to prison camp.
Where was that?
Well, prison camp, as I've already mentioned, I guess, was pleasanter than the base that I was flying from.
Right.
It was a brand new prison camp built for the Air Force, and everybody in the Air Force had a very clear vision of being in the same shape I was in. If you were flying, you were likely to get shot down and killed, and so everybody was more or less compatible. They certainly had a feeling for air prisoners.
Okay.
And there was a problem that we didn't recognize at the time. We were only 15 miles from the Russian border.
Oops.
And that was at, Sagan, S-A-G-A-N, which is in Upper Silesia, if you're looking at a map.
Okay.
Anyway, the Russians came. They didn't come until January. And it was 26 below zero.
Ooh.
The night that we marched out, just to keep us prisoners because we were a valuable bargaining chip.
Right. What year?
What year?
January.
Glad you asked that question. It was January. It was after Christmas, and we just marched out. We didn't know where we were going.
Is that 1944 or 45? 45, okay.
Anyway, we marched out. Thousands, 2,000 of us.
Wow.
And they marched us through every little town, down the main street to show how many prisoners they had. And instead of rejoicing and looking happy, everybody along the street was looking unhappy, and the women were weeping. And one old guy came out with a big old picnic coffee pot. And the officers made him quit going down the street. So he came down the middle of the road where the pile high snow was, hopping in 2 feet of snow to finish pouring his coffee into one cup and handing it to any prisoners that were handy.
Wow.
And like I say, the women were standing by the highway crying because they had people in prison camp elsewhere.
Yeah.
And the war was winding down and they were losing.
Right.
So it didn't make a triumphal march by any damn means. It made a pretty sad one.
And where were they trying to walk you?
Where were we going? We still didn't know. But they wanted to find some room for us somewhere.
Hmm.
Finally did by doubling and tripling the rooms that they had in Munich at a place called, it'll come. Anyway, it was an old prison camp. It was actually built in 1939.
Okay.
For 900 people. And when the war ended, we had thousands of people there from all over the world. Everybody was fighting. Germany was getting shot down.
Mm. Wow.
And one water spigot and an outdoor latrine with concrete vault. And we filled those up faster than they could haul it away.
I bet.
And they were not going to haul it anymore because anything that moved got shut up by the Air Force, our Air Force.
Right.
And so they said they couldn't transport the shit anymore. We had to live with it. And they did call a meeting to tell us this. And fortunately, Americans were more thoughtful and not smarter, but had some better ideas than they did. And somebody pointed out they poisoned the Scheisenpanzer was a tank car that just pumped the water out of the tanks under the toilets and took it out and spread it on the fields. And an American suggested, why don't you paint the goddamn thing white and put a red cross on the top and maybe they won't shoot it up. And that proved to be true.
Hmm.
Representing the Red Cross was a good thing in those days.
Right.
So we went back to going outside only when the all clear had blown. Otherwise, we stood in line and pooped in our pants because we all had the GIs.
Mm.
And we didn't have any indoor plumbing.
Right.
All right. So how did we get out of that fix?
Right.
Patton came.
Hmm.
And he had quite a reputation as a fast-moving general.
Right.
And he only had a small force, but it was big enough. So he came in and liberated us April the 29th. And the Germans moved away from camp fairly rapidly. Every one of them wanted to get home to the farm and become a farmer.
Right.
It was all possible.
Right.
And so we were taken over by the U.S. Army, and they managed our camp for a little while, but they wanted to get rid of us, of course.
Mm.
And they had to find a lot of trucks and get some ships and move us out through France.
Okay.
We stayed in tent camps, and they fed us 24 hours a day if we wanted it. We could have milk. Thinking. Anyway, we had hot milk bowls on the table in the mess hall all 24 hours a day, I guess. You could go and get a cup of milk anytime you wanted.
Wow.
They didn't want us going home at 127 pounds. They
right.
They wanted us to go home at 165.
Right.
And we did gain rapidly, but all of us had ruined digestive systems.
Okay.
French coast, waiting for boats to pick us up. And I, for one, didn't want to be in France and see nothing.
Hmm.
So I was AWL twice. They told us that if we went AWL, we would go to the back of the line, start over. And they didn't do that. The man in charge of my group, when we showed up, said, oh, hell, they're still loading down at the dock. Just go on down and get on. And the man in charge of my group sitting there had said that if we weren't there when we were loading, we were going to go back and start over.
Hmm.
Anyway, that guy, when he did see me finally, and he didn't see me until we were 5 days out at sea, I didn't think I wanted to talk with him about this because he was a what kind of colonel? A bird shit colonel. He graduated from West Point and believed that if they told us to do something, that was the only choice we had. And didn't see much of France, but I saw some. I saw the results of the war where everybody had nothing.
Mm.
I saw the results of the war where many, many buildings, public buildings, were destroyed.
Yeah.
And I saw what Germany could do when they were at their worst. And I met a few people in France that were mainly admirable, but had lost a war.
Yeah.
All right, so I'm home on the farm and sent to a recuperative camp to get better. There was a little problem in the planning. The moment I arrived home, my brother, who was the chief farmer at that point, fell and damaged a knee and couldn't walk well. And so they had a vacancy and nobody to hire. So Jimmy went back to work on the farm, even though I was assigned to a recuperation camp and could do absolutely nothing all day. Instead, I was hitchhiking 35 miles and working all day. And our work day on the farm was 16 hours.
Wow.
So I had gone up from probably 125 or 30 to 145 and went right back down just as fast because I was working all day on the farm. Anyway, I was also staying out all night because I did have a girlfriend back home.
Uh-huh.
And I managed to go down to 127 pounds and stay that way for years.
Wow.
But that's a complicated story.
Hmm.
Anyway, I went off to college, and that got me away from the farm, which
So let's stop for a minute here, Jim. And
big step in the right direction.
Yeah, hang on a second.
The brother's knee got better, and he went back to work on the farm. And
okay.
I went out to Fort Collins, Colorado. I wanted to be, I thought I might want to be a veterinarian. My father had always wanted to be a veterinarian and was a practicing veterinarian, but on the farm at home with no training.
He had
to train himself.
Why did you think you wanted to go to Fort Collins, Colorado?
I'd been on the train, remember?
Right.
And crossing Colorado, we were also crossing the Rocky Mountains.
Yep.
And that was what made me think I needed to see a lot more.
Okay.
What
was that, 1945 in the fall?
That would have been 45 in the fall. Yes.
Okay.
And I had persuaded my girlfriend to marry me. So we went out with an antique automobile that had been 3 years in the junkyard and an antique trailer that had been built as a camping trailer with no bathroom, no heater, and was built in Pennsylvania, so they used 2x6 beams under the floor.
Ooh.
And this trailer empty weighed 4,000
pounds.
So here I am with a car that had no reason to go an inch further.
Ooh.
And a trailer that had been in the garage that didn't cover it, so the end had melted off, and I replaced it and recovered it. And we went to Fort Collins, and they clearly were not going to accept anybody into the vet school from New Jersey. There was a rumor around that they had made a decision on this. If they did, that was discrimination. It wouldn't be too agreeable now, but that was back when we were getting started on such things.
Yeah, yeah.
Anyway, I decided after 2 years that I would go to my first choice and become an anthropologist. And that meant moving down to Albuquerque to the University of New Mexico, which I did. And I liked it enormously. I liked Fort Collins enormously, but it was a whole different ballgame.
Okay, so that would have been 47. What was your bride's name?
One of three girls, and
Okay.
And graduated during the war, as I had, but a year earlier.
Okay.
And she wanted to go west also. Both our families had been in Cape May for 200 years.
Whoa.
Which seemed long enough.
Yeah.
And so we went joyfully off to the Colorado and made it. We had no serious car trouble anywhere.
Nice.
And no flat tires. You couldn't get tires.
Right.
And Fort Collins was all that it was supposed to be. It was an agricultural college. And I was, after all, fresh from the farm. And I loved Fort Collins. It was really, really neat. But it was a small agricultural school. And when I went down to the University of New Mexico, it turns out it was internationally known.
Hmm.
And a deal more cosmopolitan.
Okay, Jim.
Graduated there.
Hey, Jim. This sounds like a good place to wrap up this first part one. And when we pick it up again, we will land you back at Fort Collins going off to UNM.
And you're going to call me again.
And so I'm going to wrap up this interview, but stay on the phone, okay?
Yes.
So hang on a second. This is going to conclude part one of a Grand Canyon oral history interview with Jim Corson, C-O-R-S-O-N. My name is Tom Martin. Today is February 5th, 2021. And Jim, thank you so very much.
I thought this was about Grand Canyon, but it's good.
Hang on.